She was about to do it, that which was strictly forbidden, what many considered impossible, what anyone who had a clue in this city dreamed of, what should have had years of planning, what had to be done right now, what would change her life forever. She was going to climb the wall that divided her world and theirs, and she would never look back at East Berlin again. She wouldn't look back at the starving people in every alley. She wouldn't look back at the tanks patrolling the streets. She wouldn't look back at the dark rooms where inspirers inspired, schemers schemed, interrogators interrogated, and murderers murdered, Nazi or not. She wouldn't look back on the propaganda on every wall, nor the graffiti that never seemed to stay. She wouldn't look back at the school where she and her peers were fed lies on a daily basis. Adolf Hitler was a great man. Nazism is the only form of government that actually works. The taking over of the Eastern world still does not give us enough Lebensraum. The 1935 findings that a child can be contaminated by merely sitting by a Jew still holds up 80 years later. She wouldn't look back at the day she and Lukas had met, or the desks at which they sat, or the smug faces of the other children, or the school gymnasium where he broke his silence, or the bloodstain on the wall from the boxing match, or the bloodstains from the ones following, or the crumpled up Hitler school acceptance letter for one Lukas Fuchs that was immediately thrown away. She would never again walk to Lukas's home after school. They would never work on their homework together again. They would never again eat Berliner Pfannkuchen on Lukas's bed, getting crumbs everywhere. She would never again spend the hours after curfew in the wrong house. Never again would they talk and talk through the hours of the night, nor stifle their laughs to avoid notice. Never again would she experience a first kiss. But also, she would never again experience Lukas's anger. Never again would their evening be dampened by his raving speeches, rough sketches, and rash schemes. Never again would he force her to leave and risk her life after curfew. He would never again punch a hole in his wall after she had asked him if maybe he could be wrong. Never again would he threaten her. But he would never hurt her. He hadn't then, and even if he wanted to, he would never get the chance to now. Amelie wiped a tear from her eye. Never again would she embrace the incredibly human person that she had fallen in love with. Amelie would never walk home again either. Her mother's airy voice and ever-present apron would never be seen again. Nor would father's ever-present SS uniform. Amelie would always remember, however, her realization when her father was walking out of the door to go to work and jokingly remarked he was going to take out the trash. The chuckles by her 7-year-old sister Annie and her mother were a stark contrast to the flood of emotions she felt in those moments. A puzzle she hadn't quite understood until then turned out to only have one missing piece. All of the horror stories Lukas had recounted had been haunting, undoubtedly. His grandfather, he claimed, had been Jewish, and he had been one of the last to be killed at Bergen-Belsen concentration camp in now Western Germany, his body still warm when British forces came. But only in this instant did she realize. What she had previously written off as an act of patriotism by her father was in fact an act of cold-blooded mass murder. Then, when he came home on September 13, 2015, he boasted, "We've nearly run out of living dollar bills." Amelie's bare feet grated against the asphalt as she sprinted through the streets. She slowed for a moment, vomiting along the side of the road, before continuing her frantic run. When she reached Lukas's house, his mother said he had gone to the city square. When she arrived in the city center, she looked frantically for him. She searched all of the shops and asked everyone she saw if they had seen a tall, muscular, blonde-haired 15-year-old who had a scar on the right of his cheek, 3 missing teeth, walked smoothly, and had the purest sapphire eyes that seemed to contain everything in the universe. No one paid attention to the sobbing, rambling teenage girl who was an unwanted interruption to their day. Then a megaphone turned on. Its reverb echoed through the area. "Lukas," called Amelie. "I am a Jew," he yelled to the crowd in the right side of the square. They stopped for a moment and watched confused. Some brushed him off as if he was a homeless dog. Some got on their phones and called the animal control. "I am a Jew," he repeated. "I am a Jew and I pray that God may have mercy on you. But I will not be sorry if he damns you all to hell." "Luke!" Amelie ran, shoved past the crowd. "Lukas!" Lukas Fuchs, a Jew in modern Nazi Germany, raised a Kalashnikov at the crowd. "Lukas!" she screamed desperately. I love you. Lucas stared ahead, his sapphire eyes stone, and began to shoot. Blanks. Amelie dove at his legs. He brushed her aside as if he was swatting a fly. He turned to see who thought they could stop him. He pointed the AKM at the girl. Amelie watched as the gun began to slip from his hands. He caught the gun and his composure. I did what I had to do, Amelie. There was no choice for me. No way to be rescued. I have nothing. You have me, Lucas. Lucas closed his eyes and took a breath. His jeweled eyes opened once more, more vulnerable than she had ever seen. Thank you for being the one that I had. Amelie watched in terror as he raised his gun. Run, he said. What? Run. Amelie ran. She didn't look back. She ran for miles. She didn't know where she was going, but she knew she had to run. She felt she had to cry, but no tears ran down her face. And here she was, at the Berlin Wall. Beyond here was a new world, a new chance, a new life. She shouldn't be thinking. There was no time to think, but she was thinking just the same. Snap out of it, Amelie. You have to make it over that wall. Amelie couldn't leave her world. No matter how terrible it was the only one she had ever known. Everything she loved, although it wasn't much, was here. She knew all the streets, the houses, and the businesses. She lived in the underworld her entire life, with no way of knowing if the overworld was good or not. The overworld Lucas saw was a heaven, spawn to swim to. Endless opportunity, unlimited wealth, and true freedom were all chronicled in the smuggled American books he purchased. He had a dream, and he was certain his dream was reality. But there was a catch. There had to be a catch. A net catching at least some salmon. Amelie couldn't accept that this hell and a perfect world could be divided by a wall. One would eventually break the wall, and the one that did would swallow the other. So why wasn't the wall broken? Because the other side couldn't be perfect. But it had to be better than this, right? Amelie looked around the corner. The last of the guards was running toward the city square. She picked up one of the guards' guns and emptied it. She took it into a house and demanded a rope. A fearful couple watched as a trembling 5-year-old boy descended from the attic, brought it to her. She stood on top of their house and heaved it over the 25-foot concrete slab. The training with Lucas hadn't hurt. She heard whispers from the house below as the standard manual antenna began humming on the roof. She knew she didn't have much time. She began to scale the rope. The rough string scraped her still bare feet raw. Her wave of emotion had come and gone, now replaced by unfaltering determination. She wondered if Lucas had felt the same way. As she neared the top, she heard an unmistakable skid of rubber on road. She leaped and grabbed the top of the wall as a bullet whizzed by her waist. Amelie looked back. They were there and they saw her. She looked around for a ladder. There was none. A man appeared through a hole in the ceiling of the armored car and raised his gun. Amelie jumped. Her leg was on fire. She looked down at the bullet wound. She might have screamed if she wasn't so determined. She dragged herself onto what looked like a government building, but regular people were going in and out. They had suitcases and were discussing something before this girl climbed over the wall. Now they backed away from the unknown teenager. She didn't know what this building was, but its pillars saved her from the bullets. She peeked around the marble pillar for a split second to see a man with a gun. He fired. She quickly hid her head behind the column. The bullet landed 2 feet past her. The crowd ran into the building. She only looked again when she heard a grunt, followed by a thud. The man had fallen down the wall. A pool of red blood was growing around his head. His face was toward her. It was her father. No, it wasn't her father anymore. He wasn't her father. He had never been. Help! She didn't scream, but she wasn't meek. Help! She called out, unwavering. 2 men looked around a building. Can you help me? Asked Amelie. A man in a camo army uniform rose and walked towards her. He had an American flag placed right on his heart. He glanced at the being he had just shot dead, but quickly looked back. The sickening loss of a human life was too much to bear, no matter how low quality. He looked back and knelt down 2 feet away from Amelie. He sighed. Can we help you? He gave a solemn chuckle. You tell us. He stretched his hand out, helped Amelie to her feet, and walked with her to life he had always known. And the life Amelie was about to begin.